Welcome to episode 9 of the Yuri Brito podcast. Thanks for joining us. It's been a real delight to speak with you and talk to you about a host of issues. There are, of course, certain issues that keep coming back to the forefront of the news, and a couple of issues that are the subtext of the news, I would say. Things that are underneath the news, things that we don't talk about, but they form the news, and they have to do particularly with the nature of man. An issue that I'm quite keenly aware of, because part of my job as a pastor is to deal with the human soul, and I want to talk about these in a few future episodes. On this episode, I'd like to discuss once again some of the pushback from evangelical Christians on the criticism of Chick-fil-A's decision. Then I want to tackle fundamentalism in the Catholic Church and the rise of fundamentalism. And thirdly, I want to discuss the fear of men. Thanks for joining us. This is the Yuri Brito podcast. So in yesterday's episode, I wanted to give a little more time to see if Chick-fil-A would come up with any kind of clarification that would ease my troubled soul over not only their delicious chicken sandwiches, but also their position to remove their support for explicit Christian charity organizations, especially those who stand in opposition to the LGBT community, like the Salvation Army or the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. What we see, of course, is the reaction of the militant left, which actually did precisely what we expected. They're going to demand more, that they are going to continue to campaign against the supposed bigotry of Chick-fil-A. You see, this is a prime example that no matter what a Christian organization will do, whether they will support, whether they will give charitable contributions to non-Christian organizations, radical anti-Christian agenda, especially of the vocal minority of the LGBT, will always demand more. They don't want only your money, they want your soul. They want to enslave you and to shackle and tie you up so that in the end of the day, you will kneel before the God or the gods of the LGBT, and there are myriad. So now what's happening is that we're receiving some pushback from evangelical Christians who are saying now that we ought not to criticize Chick-fil-A's decision. After advocating for the successful but harshly criticized restaurant, its fans were bound to feel this way, but the overwhelming urge to ditch Chick-fil-A entirely while tempting is not only wrong but against what conservatives have been preaching for years. I agree. Kimberly Ross, however, goes on to say in the Washington Examiner, quote, frankly, if we chose not to buy from a company because we disagreed with personal views held by or actions of the owner, our purchasing options would be very limited. That's, again, true. The point is very clear. Boycotting is rarely a helpful solution to deal with the cultural crises of our day. The SBC tried it with Disney, and evangelical Christians have been trying with other organizations for years. And she continues, despite the religious connection to Chick-fil-A, they are first and foremost a business that wants to be successful. And this is what conservatives, proponents of the free market, must understand. No matter which location one visits, the goal is the same, to provide good products and service to as many people as possible, and by doing so, make a profit. At the center of the mission is the brand that's being promoted. The company is keenly aware of the harm done to the brand through false smear campaigns. The author continues, Chick-fil-A is a company that not only provides great food and stellar service, but improves our communities, the people in them. A business that sets out to tackle education, homelessness, and hunger should be praised. They're giving back, not harming. Conservatives should be able to support that mission no matter how they personally feel about their changing donation structure. Not the issue. And not the issue. We understand that Chick-fil-A is not a church. We understand that. The issue is that the LGBT community does not want Chick-fil-A to operate Christianly, does not want Chick-fil-A to operate independently. This anti-Christian group and others who follow the same pattern want Chick-fil-A to submit to their demands, want Chick-fil-A to explicitly reject and deny their Christian position on marriage and other issues too. So we're not speaking out against the free market. Chick-fil-A has the luxury to give to any organization, but it's the fact that Chick-fil-A chose to no longer explicitly support distinctly Christian organizations like the Salvation Army, which is titanic in nature, and who precisely does what Chick-fil-A is interested in supporting, which is the feeding of the homeless. Even in the Salvation Army statement, they say that they are one of the greatest supporters of helping the destitute LGBT community. Many of them who suffer from tremendous depression, many of them who are homeless. Who is doing that these days? The Salvation Army is out there. Not only during the Christmas season, they're out there throughout the year, raising funds, providing food, doing services behind the scenes that we don't see. So the point is not that we're criticizing Chick-fil-A's free market position to support other organizations. The point is that Chick-fil-A has given an inch, and the LGBT community is going to take that inch and make it into a mile. And I know there are faithful people working at Chick-fil-A. That's not a problem. I also know that I'm going to continue to go and buy their food. I'm going to continue to support their work. But we're talking about here in the kind of provable, statistical, slippery slope argument here. We're not being apocalyptic. Is that we have seen this movie again and again and again. It's not only about the product, as the author says here. We're not going to forsake Chick-fil-A. And I know that Chick-fil-A has the freedom of choice to do what they please. But that's not what Chick-fil-A is doing. And it's not what is being articulated by the CEO and others in charge of Chick-fil-A. What's being articulated is they're going to give back to their community, but they're going to give back to particular communities and not the classic communities that are associated with the Christian principles like the Salvation Army. And I think we're going to see this being played out in the next few months and years, unless something remarkably happens that brings back lucidity to Chick-fil-A to realize that they're entering into a very dangerous game. This is the kind of game that they will not win. And in the end, they will end up realizing that the road to perdition is filled and paved with good intentions. The second issue has to do with the Roman Catholic Church and their war to restore the traditionalism that for so long identified Rome. Back in 2013, there was a prominent conservative author, George Weigel, who published a book entitled Evangelical Catholicism, a manifesto for making the faith more like evangelical Protestantism. And a very unique review by Mark Noe of the book, at the time teaching at Notre Dame. What that meant for George Weigel was embracing biblicism, a call for personal evangelism and an emphasis on friendship with Jesus, and even a celebration of adult baptism. Now, as we know, and the author who wrote this article on the Christian Post observes that since the late 70s, conservative Catholics and evangelicals have been allies in the culture war that has shaped American partisan politics. They have come together mainly over the pro-life issue, which I think has been a wonderful friendship with the Catholic Church, though many in the evangelical community are relatively fearful of that kind of joining of hands. I find it to be very fruitful. But the fear, of course, is that fundamentalism is rising in the Catholic Church in reaction to Pope Francis oft liberalizing of the church itself. And part of this liberalizing has to do with various decisions by Pope Francis and a host, what I consider to be explicit non-traditional Catholic points that fit more with the leftist narrative than anything else. It seems that the Argentine Pope is fairly committed to a leftist policy, a non-conservative policy, and a host of issues related not only to sexuality, but related also to the traditional issues that have defined the Roman Catholic Church for centuries. And this Pope is attempting to be a kind of new voice, a kind of reformational figure who have now come and seen the table set at the courtyard and now is attempting to turn them upside down. There are various positions that the Pope has taken, which has drawn much ire from the more conservative, or as the author says, fundamentalist wing of the Catholic Church. One of them being, for example, allowing divorce and remarriage to take communion, something that the Orthodox Church has done. Again, some of these things may not appear to be radical for the typical Protestant, but in the Catholic Church, these things are very much against the status quo, or certainly the pre-Vatican way that things were. And the fundamentalists are also scandalized by Francis reconvening a commission to study the history of women deacons in the church. And the idea, of course, is that there is an eye to authorizing the ordination of women as deacons sometime soon, and you may believe it, but there's also an attempt within the leftist wing, the more liberalizing wing of the Catholic Church, to begin to pave the way towards the ordination of women into the priesthood, something that would undo Catholic tradition and dogma in a very, very radical way. Now, the argument here is that the fundamentalists in the Protestant tradition were relatively biblicist. They opposed Darwinism. They fought for the authority of scriptures, for the atonement of Jesus, substitutionary atonement of Jesus, in response to the kind of neoliberalism in the Protestant church of the day, especially in the beginning of the 20th century. And the fear here is that the traditional Catholic is now becoming a second-class citizen in the church because of Pope Francis' agenda, which is completely changing the dynamic of the Catholic Church, not only in the United States and North America, but certainly in South America. This is a kind of religious war that we ought to keep an eye on, because the Protestant Church is waiting in the sidelines to probably receive a host of traditional Catholics who will likely contemplate Anglo-Catholicism as an option and other more Catholic-light versions of Protestantism. It's an interesting quandary that the Catholic Church is observing at this point here. At the very least, you can't say that Pope Francis has been a boring pope, one who has stood by the side only repeating ancient dogma, but certainly Pope Francis has been one who has pushed the Catholic Church and its more conservative traditional wing to the brink of despair as they have looked and seen a pope essentially dismantle what they have always treasured, the Roman Catholic Church. Now I, as one who grew up in Brazil and South America, who has seen the explicit nature of Roman Catholicism with processions with saints and the kinds of things that I saw my grandmother have, which was a plethora of little saints and incense and candles lighting and adorning her room on a regular basis, I don't want either the traditional version of the Catholic Church, nor do I want the liberalizing the Catholic Church. I think Weigel's proposal is actually a very decent one, which I think would actually facilitate the ecumenical relationships between Protestants and Catholics. I've often said that the Catholic Church in the United States is a very Protestantized church, and I've given the illustration of many years attending Mass for a project that I was doing, and remember that one of the things that happened right before the end of the service was that one of the parishioners asked the priest if they could sing John Newton's Amazing Grace, which the priest gladly obliged, and there I was, a Presbyterian, the tradition of Calvin and Knox, singing Amazing Grace at St. Augustine Catholic Church in Orlando. The times, they are changing, and this pope is certainly changing things in a way that I hope will force a reaction from the fundamentalism, and Weigel's middle ground will actually win the day in the Catholic Church. And finally, I like to end with a letter that I wrote today on my Facebook page, which I'll link for you. A letter having to do with the fear of men. And I want to conclude in a more pastoral note. Dear friend, you wake up thinking about how you can please this person or that person. It is slavish. You're anxious because you don't know what that person will think of you if you don't accomplish X, Y, or Z. And then you're anxious again later, wondering whether your work was good enough. And when it is sufficient, there's always another day ahead that will ultimately shackle your emotions, or worse, strangle it. Your spouse nor your children should demand that much from you. Your boss should not demand that much from you. A church should not demand that much from you. The reality is you are in an endless cycle. The cycle of pleasing others never ends, because when one master leaves, another will take his or her place. All of this means that you are the one who needs to change your perspective on life. God is the only one whom you should please, and he says, "Come to me, ye heavy laden, and I will give you rest." So, Even our Lord's expectations are not for you to do more, but it's for you to rest more in Him. But yet, you treat others' opinions as if they're more important than your Lord's. If the only master of your life says, come, but you choose to please the other masters who say, not enough, then you have fabricated an impressive God of your own. Let me state the problem simply. It is easier to make a golden calf than to get rid of one. What you need is to stop and listen and look at your life as it is today. You need a self-inventory. And if you are too overwhelmed and can't see where to begin, invite someone who knows you well and ask them to ask you the following questions. First, who or what owns my mind and affection? And second, how do I begin to undo my habits and rituals which keep me in this perpetual state of dissatisfaction? That's all for now. We can't really move beyond this talk unless you have some healthy self-examination first. Let's chat soon. Sincerely, Pastor Brito. The fear of man leads to a snare. Go in peace. The Lord be with you. And we will see you tomorrow. This is the Yuri Brito Podcast.